Hi, welcome to the Hungarian Living Podcast. I'm your host, Elizabeth Szabó-Vas. Our goal is to discover, celebrate, and share Hungarian heritage and encourage you to do it too. We'll touch on food, travel, history, music, and language, and share stories from our listeners. We're glad you're here. This is a podcast where we'll encourage you to dig deeper to learn about your Hungarian heritage in a variety of ways. We'll have thought-provoking conversations and share resources. So whether you know a little or a lot about being Hungarian, this is the place to be. Hi, welcome to another episode of Hungarian Living. For the month of October, the Hungarian Living podcast is continuing its focus on the Hungarian Revolution of 1956. During this series, I'm talking with my friend, Andrea Laura Rice. She has a unique perspective about 1956 and has developed and worked on a variety of projects that are gifts to our community as we seek to better understand the events and those we love whose lives changed because of that time. In this episode, we will focus on the resources and ways to involve children in a deeper understanding of those events. Welcome to the podcast, Andrea.
Thank you, Liz. It's great to be back.
So, what do you think the impact is on people who weren't involved in the Hungarian Revolution of 1956? All of this happened before you and I were born, and yet generations are still impacted.
Well, I think that's a very interesting question, because I've had the honor and the fantastic opportunity to interview over 100 people about their experience in 1956. And what I can say that I've learned is that participating in the 1956 revolution, living under communism, and in many cases being forced to flee their homeland was an incredibly impactful and influential moment in people's lives. And even now, almost 65 years later, when we do interviews with some of the folks who witnessed, in many cases, not necessarily even fought as armed freedom fighters, but who witnessed the revolution, you know, there are very few people who are not incredibly emotional when they're recalling those events, especially the moment when they had to step across the border and leave their family behind in many cases and not know when or if they could ever return. So I think when you hear a relative or someone you love or even someone you know in your community, or you have some kind of way to relate to them, if they're, for example, you know, from Boston like you, or if they're in New Jersey, or in your case, if people call you up on the Magyar Marketing phone number to chat and to share their story, as I know so many people do, it's hard not to be touched and not to be not to really feel a lot of emotions when somebody shares this kind of life-altering experience with you. So what I found, certainly in my case, is hearing these stories at the knee of my grandfather when I was quite little, or hearing my mother and aunt remember what life was like in those days. I mean, it can't help but have an impact on you. And one of the main reasons I have created these kinds of resources through the years to really actively reach out to the young people, to the next generation, is because I think it's an incredibly important, but important story. And it's a way for us to get young people to put themselves in the places of our parents, our grandparents, our aunts and uncles, to try to imagine what they would do in these circumstances. And the story of 1956 has so many different components to it that I think are really wonderful, vibrant pictures of the creativity of Hungarians, the bravery that the freedom fighters, especially the children, showed during this amazing time in history. And I think it really lends itself to a very kind of colorful type of storytelling. And so through the years, I've done an oral history website, freedomfighter56.com. I've done a graphic novel called Freedom Fighters of 56, which is historically accurate and linked to that website, the freedomfighter56.com website. It actually has components of different stories, including my own family story, kind of interwoven into the graphic novel script. And I've done downloadable educational booklets that parents can download for their kids that hopefully become an interactive and more entertaining way to learn than just to see a museum exhibit. And so I really am grateful that that you're giving me an opportunity to talk about these resources, because I think it's very, very important to the future of our community to keep these stories alive. And I think we owe it, we're obligated in many ways to the legacy of the Hungarian freedom fighters, to make sure not only the stories of the revolution, but the very spirit of the revolution lives on.
Well, and I think part of where your passion comes from is that with it being a part of your family's story and why it matters to you that kids are able to access it is because you've had to do that with your own kids. You know, you've got two boys and it's important for them to be able to access the stories in different ways. And so several of your resources definitely come from that experience, and being able to share that with a greater audience helps. It's important to be able to share it with a greater audience as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I have to say, I've never been prouder of working on these various resources than, you know, every September, October, November, when I see my kids, you know, pull out the graphic novel from their bookshelves and read it, or take it into school for show and tell or something like that. I mean, that to me is a great indication of making this story relatable to the kids. And that's my only goal in all of this. So,
well, and then for them to own it and be able to share it too, you know, and this happens to be their story, but it also does relate to other kids. And so it can be a part of their story as well. So let's dig a little deeper into how the younger members of a family can make a connection with the revolution. You mentioned the booklet. Talk a little bit more about that.
One of our family traditions, we have a lot of Hungarian family traditions, but this happens to be an American family tradition, is that every summer we go to visit National Park Service sites all across the United States. And many people will know there are well over 400 of them. I think it's 419 now. And they really do a wonderful job in preserving the history of the United States. Each of the parks that we visit has an educational booklet. And if you complete the booklet, and they're usually age-specific exercises, once you complete the booklet, the kids are given kind of a badge, a junior park ranger badge. And through the years, we've done almost 250 of these booklets with our kids. And so every time I did it, I thought, you know, this is a really great way to have the kids interact with educational material, with historical material. And they often do things like code breaker games and crossword puzzles and word searches and things like that, that just kind of bring the kids into the story a little bit more, scavenger hunts and museums, things like that. So I kind of took that model and I've created now two booklets. The first is called Magyars in America and just gives kind of a baseline understanding of what Hungarians have brought or have created in the United States. And then the second one was about 1956. It's called Hungarian Revolution in 1956. And actually, I'll be coming out with my third booklet in this series at the beginning of next year, which will be about Hungarian history. But this one is specifically about 1956. And as we mentioned in last week's podcast, if you think about the kind of the facts and figures related to the revolution, hundreds were killed, thousands were imprisoned, many of them executed, and 200,000 Hungarians left the country when the Soviet Union came back in to crush the revolution. So from October 23rd till November 4th, the Hungarian freedom fighters were able to drive the Soviet soldiers out, and they were making strides to create their own kind of free society, their own democratic society in Budapest mainly, but in Hungary, until the Soviet Union came back on November 4th. And some of the stories that make that so fascinating are the fact that so many kids were involved. So one of my favorite stories, and we have a couple sections in this booklet called Everyday Heroes of the Revolution. One of them is about the boys of Pest. And it's often said that the boys of Pest were the foot soldiers of the revolution. They were, you know, they were young. They had no training. They had no weapons, but they got very inventive and they made Molotov cocktails out of glass bottles and gasoline. They raided their mom's, you know, cupboards for homemade jam and then spread them on the windows of tanks. So the tank commanders had to come out and because he couldn't see what was going on. They got soup bowls and they turned them upside down on cobblestone streets. So again, the tank commanders had to come out and move what they thought was a mine. And then the kids would, you know, there are stories of the kids huddling in doorways across from one another on these narrow cobblestone streets. And they would have somehow found a grenade of some kind and they kind of launch it down a string and blow up the tank. But both of them are safely in the doorways. So, I mean, just
wow.
Story after story of these of this amazing bravery and creativity. They were absolutely vital to the revolution's success, but they paid a very, very heavy price. And there are a number of examples of this and names that we know of people, of kids in particular, who didn't make it out. And so I think, you know, for my 17-year-old son, for example, to read about 15-year-old Erika Szeles is, I think, a very important thing for him to relate to. You know, Erika Szeles was studying to be a chef in 56. The revolution broke out. She followed her friends. She became an armed freedom fighter. But then her friends said, no, you know, don't be an armed freedom fighter. It's much safer to be, you know, to become a Red Cross nurse. And then you can, you know, tend to wounded freedom fighters. And that's what she did. And at 15 years old, she was shot and killed by Soviet soldiers. So as heartbreaking a story as that is, that's going to be much more relatable to kids and try to and help them understand the great toll of the revolution. The other stories that I think are so incredible to think about for me as a mother listening to to some of these stories when we record them for Memory Project and other projects are examples of these kids who, you know, couldn't say goodbye to their parents or their grandparents and they walked across the border or their parents said, please go escape, leave, because you'll have a much better life. I mean, to try to put myself in that role to tell my 15-year-old son, you know, risk your life to escape this country and leave me here. I mean, wow. It's just
unimaginable.
Mind-boggling and gut-wrenching. And so, but it doesn't all have to be doom and gloom. So of course there is a very sad part to the revolution because so many people were killed and so many people left and had their lives irrevocably changed, as we mentioned. But I always like to celebrate part of 1956 as well, because it was a moment in Hungarian history when Hungarian freedom fighters were known worldwide. And there's still an incredible, I think, reputation that comes with that. And so I like to celebrate the fact that, you know, these boys of Pest were these heroes and that, you know, the revolution was really started by college students. I mean, that's a pretty fascinating historical tale to weave. And when you see a lot of these other resources that are out there, like Helen Sobja has a wonderful book, Follow the Red Star. Mm-hmm. Andy Vina, who everybody will know, he was a 56er himself, but he was the director behind Arnold Schwarzenegger's Terminator series and any number of additional movies. He actually wrote or produced his own film, Children of Glory, for the 50th anniversary. And he was also moved. I think it's very natural to be moved by some of the same stories that I just mentioned, the soup bowls and the smearing of the jam and the kids being involved. And so, you know, he's a big Hollywood producer that created this incredible story that I think really speaks to Western film audiences. We're used to, you know, all the blowing up and the blood and the gore, unfortunately. But anyway, he tells the story in that frame. And I think it makes the story come alive in a very different way. The other thing that's part of that movie, which I think is a fascinating kind of part of this whole 1956 story, and I think a lot of people have heard of this most likely, is the blood in the water story. Mm-hmm. And that's the story of the Hungarian water polo team who were kind of ushered out in the middle of the night so they wouldn't get kind of mixed up with the revolution. And when they set foot down in where the Olympic Games were being held, they discovered that, I think it was the Now I'm getting fuzzy on the details. Maybe the semifinal game, I believe, they came face to face with the Soviet Union as their opponent. And it was, they had just learned, the Hungarian water polo team had just learned that the Soviet Union had come in and had crushed the revolution. And they didn't know what had happened to their loved ones back in Hungary. So the game took on a far greater meaning than just a water polo match. It became revenge in many, many people's minds. And so the story goes that it was so aggressive and so intense, and there was so much going on underneath the water that there was literally a punch thrown at some point. And one of the Hungarian water polo players was bleeding in the water. And so the famous quote from an American commentator was, "There's blood in the water." So I'm happy to report, of course, the good guys won. The Hungarians won the match. And
Spoiler alert.
So, spoiler alert, yes. Well, you've got the Google out there, so
that's
I'm sure
right.
everybody
that's
can
right.
look that up. But it is a wonderful story, and you really can imagine what that must have been like. Yeah, so there's a lot of side stories as well that feed into this unbelievable set of events in 1956.
So, like, talking about the booklets, what age range are those for, would you say?
Well, I try to put in exercises or activities that everybody can do. So, I mean, it really depends on your kid. There's word searches. There are, just a little activity. What was allowed in communist Hungary? You can go through and you can kind of ask your parents, you know, was this allowed? Could you pray? Could you take pictures? You know, could you gather in a scout group? You know, questions like that, that hopefully lend themselves to even bigger picture conversations.
Sure.
There's even just a real basic activity, color this Hungarian revolutionary flag. So that's obviously for younger kids. There's a poster. We highlight three different posters that were used to get people to join the revolution or to alert people about a strike that was happening. So we give a space to draw your own poster. So there's those kind of activities. The rest of the book, there's also a matching game, which I really like, which talks about famous Hungarians who escaped during 1956 and who were they and what did they do? And, you know, I can give you a couple examples. Andy Grove, of course, chairman and founder of Intel. Adrian Vittadini, famous designer. I mean, there's the Gogolak brothers who became field goal kickers for the NFL. So there's a whole Andy Vina, as we mentioned, there's a whole group of folks. And so that's kind of fun to match. And then we also have children of 56ers there as well. So there are, you can take it to different levels, but the bulk of the booklet, and I did this with Piroshka Nagy, who's a dear friend of mine, also the daughter of a 56er. She lives in Budapest. She teaches at the American school. She came up with a really great idea of having two silhouettes of a boy and a girl, and they're kind of explaining to each other some of the terms that we need to teach to provide context. So, you know,
that's a good idea too.
Liberated, occupation, immigration, refugees, you know, who was Imre Nagy, things like that. And and some of the topics in the graphic novel are similar. We actually go into great detail in the graphic novel. We talk about, we introduce all sorts of characters, everything from Petőfi quotes. We talk about Sándor Kopacsi, who is the chief of police in Budapest. We basically go through historically accurate events, the burning of the newspapers in front of the parliament, Imre Nagy's speech. Then the story revolves around three teenagers, Zsolt, András, and Éva. And they go through, you know, they kind of go through all of the emotions that one would think you would go through during these 14 days of liberation and the many precarious situations that they find themselves in, the difficulties of navigating through, you know, what everyone must have been dealing with on the streets of Budapest after years of communist occupation and horrible mistreatment. So it's really a fascinating thing to consider, and that's why I think it's so important that these stories aren't forgotten, but even more important than that, that people can really try to put themselves in those positions and understand what happened.
And you mentioned that the graphic novel was drawn on several true stories, that the events that actually happened.
Yeah. So back in for the 50th anniversary of 1956, that's when I started the oral history website, the freedomfighter56.com. And my initial objective for that project was to gather as many historical personal testimonials as I could. And that was going to be the base of the historically accurate computer game that I created. The computer game was really my labor of love, and it was unfortunately a little bit ahead of its time. I think people weren't quite ready for a computer game to teach them about 1956. If I was launching it now, I think it would be a very different story. But it was actually an incredible experience. I don't regret it for one moment, and it allowed me to do a lot of research and really understand so many things in Hungary and talk to so many freedom fighters and people who were affected so profoundly by what happened in 1956. But what ended up happening is we got so many personal testimonials that we ended up publishing a book. And my mother and I worked on the book together, which was really fascinating and fabulous. And we ended up publishing two books, one in English and one in Hungarian. And we even were able to eventually present it at the White House when Andy Vina screened Children of Glory for President Bush and a small group in the White House movie theater. And wow. Yeah, it was pretty amazing. And I was able to present a book to President Bush. I presented a book to Tony Curtis, who was there, and a couple of other folks. So, but that was important because we just wanted to have a volume of these stories. So we had, in this first publication of the book, we had 56 stories, and then we had 10 additional stories in a special section from both the children of 56ers and spouses. And that kind of comes back to your first question that you asked, is how does it affect the next generation? And I think that's something we're still trying to understand. But I did love this quote that I found in actually a Wall Street Journal article. And it said, "A sense of family history is linked to self-esteem and resiliency in kids. Stories of grappling with sad or difficult events may give children the wisdom and perspective they need to thrive." The article went on to say that children gain a sense of their self in relation to other family members in the past, and this in turn builds confidence. I would also add that it builds a great deal of pride, and it helps create identity. And this is something, of course, you and I are always talking about, is ethnic identity and Hungarian heritage and being American, Hungarian, Hungarian, American.
Right.
All of the above, how all of that feeds into it. But I mean, I have the blood of a freedom fighter. That's what I absolutely embrace that as my identity. My mother at the age of 14, my aunt, my grandparents, they were freedom fighters. And so, you know, that's an important sense of my identity now. Whenever the going gets tough, and Lord only knows, you know, we need to tap into our inner freedom fighter right now to get through these crazy days.
Definitely.
But, you know, I love that. I love that, you know, I have the blood of a freedom fighter, and that, you know, it, sometimes that gets me through.
Exactly. Well, and I think too, that being able to have the story shared within a family, that's part of the challenge. You know, I just had a call probably about a month ago from a gal who had no idea what her family story was. And she happened to pick up a copy of the Time magazine from that time where they have a freedom fighter pictured on the front. She took it home to her dad. She said, "Dad, let's go through this and let's talk about it." And he started really sharing things that she had never heard before. And I, you know, sometimes it just takes a long time to have these conversations, but if these people are alive, we need to have these conversations as much as they can talk about it. But within a family, you know, what are some ways to get people to have a conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think there's a couple of resources that I think are easy to access. And it really doesn't depend on how tech savvy you may be. They're all pretty easy. So the first one is on the freedomfighter56.com website. if you scroll to the end of it, although I know you'll also include this link in the show notes, there is an interview guide that you can use to get started. And I would encourage people to print that out and just kind of look through it. I always use that as a baseline, but, you know, I think the conversation you need to let the interviewee lead you and guide you through the topics, because what we notice is that in many cases, you know, one memory will spark another, and sometimes it goes off on a tangent, and you know, if that's okay, sometimes that's okay.
Exactly.
But it's incredibly important, especially where we see kind of these generational differences in life philosophy and in understanding and in building relationships between the generations. I mean, of course, within a family, get your kids to talk to your parents, or get the grandkids together, or the aunts and uncles, whoever it may be, whatever kind of familial network you can create or opportunity to share these stories within your family is incredibly important, however you do it. So don't, you know, a lot of people contact us about Memory Project and say, hey, will you come and interview, you know, my dad, he's 91. So I say, you know, listen, I would love to come and interview your father. Nothing would make me prouder and happier, but, you know, it has to be at the end of the day cost effective, and it has to be convenient in terms of a time where, you know, where all of us are able to get together. And that, you know, I hate for us to lose a story because that opportunity doesn't present itself in time. So there are a couple of things. The questionnaire or the survey is one option. So one phone app that I really, really love is StoryCorps. And we actually consulted with StoryCorps and the Shoah Foundation and the Digital Storytelling Group in California before we came up with our methodology around Memory Project. So I know their applications and their methodologies pretty well. They have a fantastic app that you can download for free on your phone, and you basically can interview a family member or a community member and have it go directly to the StoryCorps app. Now, I think it's limited to 45 minutes, which is not ideal. I would definitely not go into an oral history interview with a time limit. So in some cases, as a backup, I'll actually use my voice memo on my phone and just break it, you know, into half an hour segments or even shorter segments than that, so they're not quite as unruly. But I mean, the phone is a fantastic opportunity to take pictures, to scan documents, and to do voice memo recordings, or even video,
right? Yeah,
or videos with your loved ones. So the StoryCorps app also has an opportunity to use pre-written questions, and you can actually choose from a number of different menus and create your own custom version. So I would also recommend that as a possibility. And there are other options out there, but I think those are great, a great way to get started. But please, 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 I can't reiterate this enough. Do not wait. This is a huge, it would be a huge loss to lose anyone's personal recollections, personal stories about this time. It's too important. 65 years, this year will be 64, next year will be 65. And, you know, that's a short amount of time in history, but it's a long period of time in someone's lifetime. So please, I urge you, talk to your relatives, to your community members who you know are 56ers, get their stories, and either, you know, writing it down or recording it in some way, and make sure you share it in whatever way you can. It's incredibly important.
Well, and I think the challenge that some people have is the concept of just talking about their story. Maybe they don't know where to start. Sometimes we get people that'll call. I had a gentleman call in, and I started just asking him a couple of questions about his story. He goes, oh, it's nothing. It's a paragraph, my story. And I said, oh, listen, it's your life story. It's longer than a paragraph. And you know, we ended up talking for like an hour. And he said, wow, thanks so much for talking with me. This was really, you know, interesting. Of course, I was the one that was listening to the interesting story. But for him, it made him think, oh, I do have stories. I do have things that I remember. And, you know, like you were saying, one thing led to another. And so I think that, you know, it's important to, even if it's just reading a book or a magazine or an excerpt from something else will get somebody thinking about the story. You know, if you show them something from the Memory Project or the 56 website, a story, then they can say, oh, well, that didn't happen for me. That didn't happen for me, but this did. And it gives them something to think about and to expound on. So,
absolutely. And in this, you know, in this day and age where especially older folks are, you know, are hunkering, you know, sheltering in place, they're hunkering down at the moment, they're not traveling as much as they have been. And I think that's the right decision because there's so much we don't know about our current situation. But, you know, the loneliness factor, I think, is huge. And to have somebody who cares enough to ask about their story, who really wants to listen to them, who wants to talk to them, who wants to record the story. And I mean, it's a win-win, right?
Absolutely.
You share the story, you get to preserve the history, and you make a friend online on Zoom or Squadcast or whatever even FaceTime. I mean, you can do it through any way that you possibly can find, and you know, that makes them comfortable. You can even sit out on the patio 6 feet apart and bring out an old fashioned tape recorder. You know, there's no right or wrong, but I'm just really urging people to make sure that they don't miss the story. They don't miss the opportunity.
Exactly. Find the way that works for you. There's lots of options.
Right. So, I wanted to take this opportunity to talk about how we celebrate and commemorate 1956 within our communities, because I've really been privileged to be part of a number of these celebrations. And actually, that's one of my favorite things to do, is to create multimedia exhibits around 1956. I've been doing this since the 40th anniversary and have a pretty interesting collection of my own that I've collected over the years of different ephemera and artifacts and even personal pictures that my uncle took. And I have a wonderful original sketchbook that one of his friends, actually one of my family's friends, when they escaped, he drew in the sketchbook and he left it with my family. So I have that. And so I really feel very, very close to the topic. So I've been able to do these multimedia exhibits in the past. And I think that's very important. This is to think about how kids learn, how people absorb information. And it's through all different types of media. I find that's the most interesting way and the most effective way to allow people to experience something like 1956. So what I would suggest in the exhibits that I've seen that have been really, really effective is using multiple forms of media all at once. You can download, you know, a Memory Project trailer from our website for free. You can, there's all sorts of exhibits of photographs from 1956 that you can get access to. There are front pages of newspapers that you can print out and exhibit. I'm guessing in everyone's local community, there are families that have these things, artifacts, et cetera, that they may be able to share. You can download online, you know, a radio broadcast, the very last radio broadcast, pleading for help when the Russians were on their way in. And most importantly, you know, you can hear someone share their own story. So you can have somebody, you know, right there in person talk about their experiences. Oh, and of course, don't forget the booklet for the kids. So there's a lot of free resources that are out there that I think really help kids learn about 1956 in all of its different forms and all of its different complexities. One thing I'll leave you with is when we started Memory Project, I had a friend who is the daughter of one of the 56ers who we interviewed. And it's an amazing interview. It's one that we use in almost all of the trailers. And she looked at me and she said, so there were three of us there, all daughters of 56ers. And we were kind of, you know, talking about the impact of 56 on us. And Erika looked at me and she said, 1956 is the most influential topic in my lifetime, even though I wasn't even alive when it happened. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was such a fascinating statement because it had been passed down as mm-hmm. that, as something that informed and influenced everything in her life. It was a pretty profound statement, I thought. So yeah, so preserve the stories, read them, listen to them, you know, just try to learn about them, because it really is this fascinating modern tale of David versus Goliath. And it was a shining moment in many ways in Hungarian history, and it influenced our American Hungarian community very, very deeply. And I think we still see that today.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So one great example that we've seen within a community is in Boston. The Hungarian community there printed out the questionnaire and had kids within their Cserkész group, their Hungarian scout troop, interview or ask a question of the 56ers who were gathered in the audience. And it was actually, I'd never seen it done this way, but I thought it was a fascinating way to connect the generations within a community.
For sure.
Nobody was pressured to answer the questions, but you know, they would pass the microphone around, and several of them would end up talking about things in response to the questions that were posed by the kids. And I thought it was really a brilliant way to connect them. And I think it's a great way that the kids will never forget that. And the 56ers, they felt that they had made a great contribution, and they felt like they were important during that commemoration, during that celebration, and they were passing on their stories. And so I think it was a real win-win and a great example of how to creatively use some of the many resources that are out there to further build the community.
Having an objective question and having a child ask the question gave an opportunity to share something that may have never been shared before. And, you know, what a resource for that community to hear the stories from them, from their own voice, the impact and answering the questions. What a treasure. I'm so glad they did that.
It was wonderful. And as you said, you know, in many cases, it's important to start this conversation within your family. But if it's an incredibly sensitive topic that family members don't want to talk about, sometimes it's easier to share your story with someone else.
Exactly.
And we've found that certainly in Memory Project. And that's also, that's another way, another reason I think it's important to have both the resources, the Memory Project, which is the visual history archive, which are the actual interviews that we've done. But Freedom Fighter 56, you know, your parent, your grandparent could write that. You could write that on your own. And then we publish it that way. So you're in control of everything that you're saying. Or if you're, you know, we often hear that, oh, my father had the most incredible story. I'm so sorry. You know, I never wrote it down, or we never got it recorded. Well, you write it. You write what you remember that your parents said, and you create, you know, a secondhand testimonial, but of what your parent or your grandparent shared. And we will post it on freedomfighter56.com under your byline, because it's a secondary story, but it's, again, it's how, you know, it's what you remember and how it affected you. And I think that's going to be the next layer of this, is how we determine how 1956 continues to have an incredible ripple effect in our community, and how it continues to have that impact on the next generation and the next generation.
Absolutely. And how we address it or listen to it makes all the difference. Well, thank you, Andrea, again, for sharing the resources that you've developed and that you are aware of, particularly in regards to children and the 1956 revolution. We will include links in the show notes, so be sure to visit HungarianLiving.com for those. And in the next episode, we will talk about another important project that we have touched on, which is Memory Project, but I know that that'll be of interest to our listeners as well. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Liz. I really, as you can tell, I love talking about this and how it's influenced my family and me. So thank you for the opportunity.
Hungarian Living is a division of Magyar Marketing, the Hungarian store, where you can find meaningful gifts with Hungarian style. Check us out at magyarmarketing.com. And special thanks to Stephen Cicek and the Animal Cannibals for the show music. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode of Hungarian Living, please subscribe and share this podcast with your favorite Hungarian. Check out our show notes for links to resources mentioned in this episode. If you have a question or comment, email us at podcast@hungarianliving.com. We'll catch you next time.